broader LGBTQ community, because along with the gender of the partner not being a very helpful indicator all the time, bisexuals also have kind of the, you know, the blessing and the curse, let's call it, of blending into various environments. You know, you're totally right. Like, there's, for a lot of queer people, you know, their sexual identity is an embodied marker. There's queer codes, queer coding that they kind of give off. But with a lot of bi people, they can be read as either straight or gay. Like, you cannot necessarily make an assessment. There are no appearance norms for bisexual people, although a lot of bisexual people do use things like, you know, piercings, glasses, hair, you know, even wearing a bi pin to communicate their sexual identity externally. But there's kind of a privilege, obviously, that comes with that as well. I have read some things about how, you know, that might also kind of interfere with, you know, it's like, oh, you have this privilege of being in this community where other people, you know, don't necessarily have the privilege to not be so visibly queer. Not that I'm suggesting that anyone should not want to be visibly queer.
I wanted to pivot to a comment by, I think it was Andrew Scott, the actor who has been in Strangers Are Us. No, Strange. I can't remember the name of the film. It'll come to me later in the show. But he talked about whether or not we should start moving away from the term openly gay. Now, he was specifically talking about actors in acting roles and how, you know, it creates this assumption. And it also begs the question of, you know, that implies that folks are in the closet. Is that still a reality now? But I think in this dynamic, when we're talking about bi folks in the workplace, it kind of begs the question, you know, is being openly bi something that, you know, is what we should be talking about in 2024? Or is this a conversation that we really need to leave in the past couple of decades?
Yeah, I mean, it's another great question. You know, I think a lot of the research basically agrees that for queer people, you know, it is, they have more positive experiences in the workplace when they are out. That's kind of, you know, well-known fact. But what's interesting about bisexuals is because there's a range of ways that you can identify as bisexual. Like, it is, as you spoke about earlier, there's so much diversity within that community. And this one author in particular found that being out at work for bisexuals actually might cause more harm than good. And the other reality is that bisexual people are way less likely to be out at work than lesbian or gay people. So when we're talking about, you know, out bisexuals, unfortunately, I do think that these conversations still need to be happening because they are, you know, lagging behind, for lack of a better word, when it comes to being out, being included at work, feeling safe at work, because, again, a lot of these stereotypes and ideologies that are going around, and because in a lot of ways they don't necessarily always align with a lot of the heteronormative ideas that kind of infiltrate our workplaces. Whereas a lot of the more, and again, I'm making a huge generalization here, but there's a lot of research saying that, you know, it's great that we have gotten to a point where, as you were saying, maybe we don't need to talk about someone who is openly gay. But a lot of times those people that we're seeing or the very visible people have aligned themselves with heteronormativity, and it's creating this homonormativity, and we're normalizing very specific representations of what it means to be gay, and that actually forecloses the opportunity for non-normative sexual identities to be visible, because they are, you know, it doesn't match that image of, well, this is what we think a gay person is like. You know, I like to say sometimes it's like, you can be gay, but only if you're our version of gay, only if you fit into this box. And I think that, yeah, for a lot of bisexual people, it's, you know, it's obviously an inherently personal choice, and coming out is one that you have to make over and over and over again every time you meet a new person, a new colleague, a new team member. And again, when you don't have those visual cues, when you're not, when you're blending in as straight or gay and your partner isn't a good indicator, it just really makes it much more of a challenging kind of decision to make.
Your comments sort of really resonate. And I think the reason being is there have been this allegation standing against bi folks that's essentially pick a lane. And that's an allegation that's been resting against them for a long time. And I just find it fascinating the idea that sort of gay homonormativity is sort of reinforcing that binary of pick a lane. It can be either one, but it must be one or the other. And I just think that it's very saddening to hear that even when, gay normativity is or has been when gay relationships have been normalized within the broader community, that has in effect reinforced that binary that's being forced onto bi folks. Yeah, certainly something to think about. The last question I had for you is for the folks listening, I am certain, statistically speaking, there is someone driving in their car or listening to the podcast available on Spotify. And they are thinking, oh, okay, yeah, this kind of sounds like me. I'm in the middle management. I'm bisexual. Maybe I'd like to contribute. So what are you looking for them to be able to contribute, and how do they contribute to your study?
Yeah, so there's a few criteria that I'm looking for. So first is that someone identifies as bisexual. And when I say bisexual, I am including all sexual identities that are attracted to more than one gender. So two-spirit, pansexual, queer, fluid, you name it. Another criteria is that you have to be out to some degree at work. So that could be one colleague, it could be your team, but you do need to be out at work. Third, you need to hold a manager, senior manager, director, some sort of middle management title, and then working in a professional service organization. So that would be something like accounting, law, advertising, banking, finance, consulting. So a really broad range there as well. And then the final one is that you consider yourself or you have been identified as a leader within your organization. And I know that's a little bit ambivalent, but it's intended to be. I think a lot of people are leaders, so hopefully that also captures a broad group. And to learn more about the study, you can visit www.bisexualleaders.com, and there you will find information about me, the research process, how the study will protect your confidentiality, and all of the different components that will go into it.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I sincerely hope that some folks listening will reach out and participate. I think until research like this is done and the business community kind of learns of the results, we can't improve until we know what the challenges are, and then be able to adapt from there. So I want to thank you so much for the work you're doing on this. I really want to thank you again, and we will be back just after this.
Someone's knocking on my heart again. I can feel it tumbling under my skin. And the days and nights keep moving on, while words keep tumbling. Could be strong, couldn't go.
Welcome back to Canqueer, home of community media. I forgot who and where I was. But yes, my name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Just after we'd spoke with Tarlene in the interview, a really interesting question came up about the sort of context of privilege.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that you wrote it down on a post-it note. So do you want to expand on that piece and why it's relevant?
We talked about it for another like 20 minutes, but the short version, this is actually a concept from sociolinguistics. That's the study of how language and society sort of butt up against each other. And in most of the UK, you can tell somebody's socioeconomic class more or less within 5 seconds of meeting them just from their accent. You can sometimes even tell what neighborhood they grew up in, sometimes even what street they grew up in just from their accent. So you can actually get a lot out of that. And when they were studying this in the 60s and 70s, they're especially looking at Ireland, the details don't matter. But what they're talking about was, or what they were investigating was, there's this one accent that specifically marked people as working on the docks in Cork. And it really marked you as being working class, sort of low education, hard labor, etc. And the question was, why would people openly speak with that accent if they could just imitate somebody else's accent and falsify prestige? Like, if you can talk with a posh accent, if you can imitate the Queen, why wouldn't you just do that? And the simple answer was actually just, within that group, there's prestige involved in using that accent. So if you're talking about any society, any group, any social category, any demography, any population, you're going to have internal measures of prestige that sometimes even mark you as being low prestige on the outside. So, you know, knowing that facial piercings and clearly artificially colored hair and the cat rim glasses mark you as being a certain type of LGBTQ individual, and some people really don't get along with those folks, why would you go through that process of marking yourself as such? And the reason why is because within their own circle, that's sort of the prototypical, that is the thing you aspire to, that is what high prestige looks like. And in the end, people interact with people in their own circle. They don't interact with the outside world. They don't care what strangers out there in the world who they don't interact with on their daily basis care, think about them. They really care about their own circle, the people within their communities. So they're pushing to sort of aspire upwards to the top of their own category. And you get these interesting little situations where in some contexts you'd have prestige and privilege, and in other contexts you'd have no prestige and privilege. So when you're talking about prestige and privilege, there's a huge issue of space and time and context that is sometimes missing from the conversation that actually the researcher we were just speaking to was trying to capture, the idea of what does that look like in the workplace versus what does it look like in your personal life? Yeah, and that was the missing piece.
It reminds me of, so Jake works in a very, he works in a plumbing firm.
Yes.
And 100% code switches.
Oh, yeah.
A part of me is like, I'd love to see just how gay Jake is at the office, but really isn't. And we've talked to folks before about people who can't code switch out of sounding very gay.
Yeah.
Their experience of it is so much so different. Mm-hmm. And I kind of referenced that in the idea of sort of the aminosity, because it is a privilege to be able to not put a target on your own back by just speaking. You know what I mean? It's not great. All right.
Well, some people choose not to. Like that is also a choice that comes with that, that you do put that on yourself so that, because you don't know who's in your group sometimes. You don't know. And that's one of the things about the so-called gay-sounding voice, is that some people adapt it all the time so that people who are in the closet can find them. It's complicated. And some people choose not to do that. Like when I'm at work, I was told at my previous job that like one person figured out that I was gay. It's because I used my straight voice, because I don't care. When I'm at work, I'm just there to do my job, you know?
Yeah.
So that kind of thing happens. And I wasn't really interested in people. Sometimes they put a question mark over me. They can't tell if I'm zesty or just nerdy.
Yeah. Like I'm in that gray area. There's a kind of spice. Is it neurodivergence? Is it queerness? Like what's, there's some kind of spicy going on there. We just can't figure it out. It's interesting because queer culture is always about in-group and out-group communication. Like that's really, I think, a key thing I want to kind of circle back to. You go way, way back. You've got pennies in the loafers, you know what I mean? Or the hanky code, where different hankies had different things. And there was even a TikTok where at a certain cymbal beat, you like do the quick little hand drop. And unless you knew to look for it, and the girls, gays, and the theys had it nailed down. But I think for this generation, it really became that small, thing that communicates that someone's gay. It's an interesting topic. I can talk about it all day, but we don't have time.
Yes.
Because there has been some policing happening in Halifax.
Policing.
I forgot to mention this to you.
Oh, okay.
So this is new. This is actually, it's not specifically in Halifax. We're talking Lower Sackville, Nova Scotia.
Okay.
Now, in Nova Scotia, the RCMP responded to a call at a business, specifically a doctor's office in Sackville, where a 39-year-old man, I'm not going to say any names, who was from Lower Sackville, took out the pride flag. I defaced the pride flag and was uttering threats toward queer folks and the doctor's office. Now, he has been arrested for uttering threats, and specifically, with the charges of mischief and uttering threats. But it's very likely that the Crown will look at adding hate motivating to sentencing.
At a doctor's office?
I mean, there's a pride flag outside. You say this like there haven't been ridiculous things that people have protested against.
Okay, I thought you meant like he just walked in there and started berating.
Like he was there for not a mammogram. I mean, we could have been there for a mammogram. He's there for his,
Men do get breast cancer.
That's where I walked that back.
It's not common, but it's not rare either.
This is true. We are aware that the new sort of
legislation,
proposed rules and regulations by Daniel Smith, the Premier of Alberta, This touches on sports, it touches on school, it touches on healthcare. There's a whole range of things that she is looking to roll out in the province. Already, over 1,000 people in Calgary have protested in downtown to this response. There's also been protests in Edmonton. And I believe that most of the major queer organizations in Alberta have already issued statements decrying this somewhat vague news out of Alberta. We are looking to get some details before diving into it. And one of the things that, because me and you, Sebastian, do
Yes,
not
me.
agree on this matter.
Oh, we agree. We agree broadly. It's just the details we disagree on.
This is true, but it's
Yeah.
affirmed it. Like, there are, I can probably count on one hand when me and you have been in a discussion where I'm like, I don't want to talk about this with you. Because it's literally our job. We've been talking to each other for 10 years. Like,
Yes.
we put married couples to shame. Like, we are Patty Cathys. And there are very few times where I think we do not and may not meet. But I want to look. We're going to reach out to some experts, and specifically, I want to talk with an expert in competing human rights, because a lot of this legislation is being penned up as the rights of the parent, parental rights, which assumes that the right of the child doesn't matter or is subservient to the parental rights. But in Canada, there's loads of rights that compete with each other. Your right to religion versus the right to free speech, freedom of association versus, the right to safety. There's all of these competing rights. And there is, surprisingly, an academic area of study specifically on competing rights. So I want to, we love an academic, and we're going to bring someone in and talk about in Canada, how do you weigh up these two things against each other as an insight as to where this subject might fall? Because right now, Canada hasn't judicially decided anything. They've come in guns blazing with notwithstanding clauses. So there hasn't really been a discussion on that sort of legal element of it and how they are weighted. It just really hasn't really happened so much. So that's what I'm really curious about. We will also reach out to some of those queer organizations in Alberta, specifically folks that work with students, to get a sense of, and me and you this is an area we can agree. Laws and rules come out all the time. They may or may not be enforced in the way people think they will. And the actual impact, could be one thing. But most importantly, there is a culture shift that happens when law changes. And there is a feeling in the room when you step into a space after there's been major changes like this. I want to get a sense how folks around in Alberta are feeling right now with just that notice out there. I suspect there's probably some fear, probably not a lot of clarity or information, but I am curious to see what impact it's already had before obviously the details coming out. But we shall see. We're going to reach out to folks and try and iron it out. I do have Eurovision news, but I don't think we're going to get to it,
Yeah, we're out of time.
which is fine. They've confirmed all of the semi-finalists, which includes a drag race judge. Don't know if you knew that. That I think is pretty new for this week. Drag race judge added, but we did run out of time. We're going to be playing out with Bebop by A Trozzo on the album Big Cat. I have been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
PFLAG Canada is there when it seems no one else is. Did you know that LGBT students hear anti-gay slurs an average of 26 times a day? One out of every four LGBT youth are told to leave home. LGBT youth are more likely to be homeless. 30% of suicides are LGBT. PFLAG is committed to anyone struggling with sexual orientation and gender identity issues. PFLAG Canada supports, educates, and provides resources 24/7. Visit pflagcanada.ca.
Whoa, 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 it's five.